He needs all 4 years, not just two, to fix the mess. And that's what we need. If we lost the midterms, heaven forbid, if we lost the majority in the House, it would be the end of the Trump presidency in a real effect.
Oh, don't make promises, Mike Johnson. Or do.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
None of it's right.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. Downstairs, clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Hey, from Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Brandcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internet around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Welcome to the Bradcast. We've got a lot of stuff that I'm hoping to catch up with today, including first a bit of related news, news related to the Epstein files.
The Dow is over $50,000. I don't know why you're laughing. That's okay. Should be talking about.
Okay. I will do my best to get to that, Pam Bondi. But first, and that chuckle you heard there was from Desi Doyen. Hi, Des. How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
All right. First, dozens of FBI witness interviews from the investigation of Jeffrey Epstein appear to be missing from the massive trove of files released by the Department of Justice last month, according to a new CNN review, including three interviews related to a woman who accused President Donald Trump of sexually assaulting her decades ago when she was 13 years old. Yes. Those three interviews mentioned by CNN there and the FBI's handwritten interview notes that go with them, those are the ones that we've been specifically talking about for much of the past week or more on this program after independent investigative journalist Roger Sullenberger initially identified them as completely and unlawfully missing from the DOJ's tranche of documents that they falsely declared to be complete all the rest of the files to be released under the Epstein Files Transparency Act. Those missing files were confirmed that Sullenberger identified initially. Those were confirmed as missing as well by NPR earlier this week, followed by others like the New York Times and, in this case, CNN, each of whom advanced the story a little bit, but most importantly, confirmed it to the point where it's not just independent journalists like Sullenberger and independent radio shows like the Bradcast trying to bring this issue to light. It's all getting out there now. Importantly, good. I still want to mention that the missing interviews in the case of that 13-year-old girl who came forward as a woman in 2019, they are still, at least as far as we know, uncorroborated, but we don't know that for sure because we're not allowed to see them. They're being hidden from us. We do know that her allegations were apparently credible enough that the FBI interviewed that woman three more times after their initial interview with her. And what we know for sure is that all of those interviews and the FBI interview notes that go with them, known as 302s, are supposed to have been published under the Epstein Files Transparency Act, which was signed by Donald Trump himself, and that they have not been. Moreover, Congressman Robert Garcia of California, ranking member of the U.S. House Oversight Committee, has also confirmed that those interviews are missing. And after viewing the unredacted version of these files, the database, the full Epstein database that DOJ has allowed members of Congress to see, he confirms that those interviews are also missing from that unredacted database of the Epstein Files archive. Now, among the new points that CNN included in their reporting on this is that an evidence log provided to attorneys for Epstein associate Ghislaine Maxwell for use during her trial on sex trafficking, since DOJ must make available all evidence, all such evidence they have to make sure that defendants have that for their trials if they want it, that evidence log includes serial numbers for about 325 FBI witness interview records. But, notes CNN, more than 90 of those records, over a quarter of the list, apparently, do not appear to be present on the DOJ website, according to CNN's review. 90 such interviews. So it's not just those three interviews that we've been talking about, but a whole bunch more missing for some reason. Are they being withheld by the DOJ? Are they missing entirely from some reason that the DOJ doesn't even have them? Have they been destroyed? Or did some former president at the time steal those documents, store them in his bathroom at Mar-a-Lago or something? We don't know. But what we do know, at a minimum, is now confirmed by pretty much every major media outlet out there that among those missing records are three interviews related to a woman who told agents, according to CNN, that Epstein had repeatedly abused her starting when she was approximately 13 years old, and who also accused Donald Trump of sexually assaulting her around that same time as well. It is, make no mistake, a huge story. One that I suspect is not going away anytime soon, no matter what Pam Bondi says. But with the corporate media now on it, I'm hopeful that they will stay on it. And for the moment, we can try to hit a few other items today that I've been trying to get to for the past week or so, including some new elections and voting news, including some new good news in the ongoing gerrymandering wars as we head into the unbelievably critical midterm elections. Whereas even House Speaker Mike Johnson conceded on Tuesday at the State of the Union address, the entire presidency is on the line. We will get to all of that in a bit, along with Desi Doyen's latest Green News report.
Yes.
With more on Trump's record-long tirade of BS before the joint session of Congress earlier in the week. But I do want to pick up today on a few other related and or noteworthy pieces of news that I've been trying to get to all week. All right, this first one, let me see how to avoid trouble with the FCC over this story. I'll just be very careful here. This from the New York Times. Lawmakers in New Jersey have added some of the state's trademark in-your-face attitude to a measure that would expand residents' ability to sue federal immigration officials. The new legislation is to be known by its acronym, which I cannot say on air, but the full name of the bill, so you can do your own math here, the bill is named the Fight Unlawful Conduct and Keep Individuals and Communities Empowered. So I can tell you the last three words there, Individuals and Communities Empowered, is acronymed as ICE.
Yeah, so it starts with
an F. And the first part is Fight Unlawful Conduct and Keep. And you can figure out the first word
starts with an F.
There we go. Anyway, that would apparently this bill would expand residents' rights under state law in New Jersey to sue immigration officials for unconstitutional conduct. So I like this bill and I like the acronym. Well done, New Jersey. Also, thank you for Bruce Springsteen.
The Dow is over $50,000. Okay. I don't know why you're laughing. We should be talking about.
Okay, Pam, settle down. We will get there. Now, late last week, as I'm sure you know by now, the corrupt U.S. Supreme Court did something that a lot of folks think is a good thing. And, well, by and large, it is. They struck down Donald Trump's beloved taxes on imports to the United States, known as tariffs, finding them to be unlawfully and unconstitutionally implemented by Donald Trump under the 1977 federal law known as the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. an acronym I can say on FCC radio, whether I want to or not. It is IEPA. Now, after finding what everybody already knew, they determined the measure says that law, IEPA, says nothing about allowing the president to unilaterally implement tariffs on goods imported from countries to the U.S., which Americans ultimately pay as the cost of goods is increased in order to pay for the tariffs that importers must pay at the border to receive those goods. No, they are not paid by foreign countries. As Trump yet again on Tuesday night during his State of the Union address lied about. Now, this just days after the Federal Reserve itself issued a report to the contrary. As Reuters recently reported, Americans are shouldering almost all of President Donald Trump's import tax surge. This is a report from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York earlier this month. The bank said 90% of the tariffs imposed by the president on imported goods are borne by American consumers and companies, pushing back against the Trump administration's argument that the levies are paid by foreigners. They are not. This paper, again, from the Fed, said that between January and August of last year, Americans took 94% of the hit from Trump's tariffs. Mm. During September and October, that ebbed a bit to just 92%. It was settled down to 86% in November. The New York Fed finding also syncs up with a report that was put out by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office just one day earlier. It said, quote, higher tariffs directly increase the cost of imported goods, raising prices for U.S. consumers and businesses. And when it comes to who will pay the tariffs, the CBO said foreign exporters will absorb just about 5% of the cost. And in the near term, U.S. businesses will absorb 30% of the import price increases by reducing their profit margins, and the remaining 90% will be passed through to consumers by raising prices. That's the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office just one day before the New York Fed came out and said almost the exact same thing. So, yeah, when you hear Trump, when Trump said, as he did, on Tuesday night at the State of the Union,
and as time goes by, I believe the tariffs paid for by foreign countries will, like in the past, substantially replace the modern day system of income tax, taking a great financial burden off the people that I love.
So, yeah, when you hear him say that, all right, shut up. When you hear him say that, it's a lie. He's lying, and the tariffs are not paid for by foreign countries. They are paid for by you in higher costs on imported goods, which is, frankly, most of the goods consumed in the U.S. by and large. And all of those Republicans applauding him there, they know it because their own Congressional Budget Office told them so, as has the Fed. But they're hoping that you don't know it. So they're, you know, playing along, clapping like trained seals. In fact, as Congress knows, it is Congress, not the president, who gets to make such determinations regarding tariffs as per the Constitution itself, as the Supreme Court majority underscored in its ruling last week. And while Congress may legislatively give some of their powers away, give some of their powers of the purse to the president to take certain measures during, for example, an international economic emergency as per IEPA, taxing Americans on imports is decidedly not one of those powers that Congress has given to the White House. As many of us already knew, you can just read the act. It does not mention the word tariff as a 6-3 majority on Donald Trump's own corrupted Supreme Court. And yes, by the way, it is still corrupted, as they affirmed last week in a majority decision signed by all three of the court's Democratic appointees, who were joined in this case by Chief Justice John Roberts and Trump appointees Neil Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett. Nonetheless, the ruling at the time, while it was a relief for many, it resulted in declarations from some corporate yutzes like MS Now's Stephanie Ruhle, and I'm sorry, yes, she is a yutz, like this comment on Friday after the ruling was handed down.
On this day, this is the day when the Supreme Court joined the No Kings movement.
So no, Stephanie, they decidedly did not. They did not join the No Kings movement, Stephanie. And she, by the way, she's MS Now's, formerly MSNBC's, financial journalist.
Yeah.
Jesus, Stephanie. Yes. This court still almost always supports Donald Trump. And while the ruling was certainly good news in general for importers and American consumers, it's unclear at this point how they're going to get their $250 billion or whatever back in from those tariffs, those unlawful tariffs. Trump has said in the past that the tariffs were taking in trillions, but I bet it won't be trillions when it comes time to actually pay it back somehow.
True.
If he ever does. But there's also at this point from Talking Points memos, Josh Marshall, just after the ruling was handed down by SCOTUS, that I wanted you to just keep in mind, that maybe Stephanie Ruhle needs to keep in mind, warning people, do not be fooled by the court's ruling. No, they have not joined the No Kings movement. As Josh writes, the depth of the Supreme Court's corruption has forced us to find new language to describe its actions, undoing Trump's massive array of tariffs that upended the global financial system. We say the court, quote, struck down these tariffs, but that wording, he notes, is inadequate and misleading. These tariffs were always transparently illegal. Saying they were struck down suggests at least some sort of notional logic that the court disagreed with. But there is no ambiguity in the law in question. Trump assumed a unilateral power to declare to find a national emergency. And then he used this transparently fraudulent national emergency to exercise powers that the law in question does not even delegate. Even if this were an emergency, he would not be able to do this. And I think he sort of got the idea that anything he wants to do, he can declare an emergency over and then just do it, something that a lot of election watchers are sort of concerned about this year, that he might just declare an emergency and send out ICE to the polls for some bogus reason. Here we have an example of him doing exactly that. It was completely bogus, but... Well, as Josh writes, it is, among other things, an example of the central tenet of current so-called conservative jurisprudence to determine what law or constitution would require if words had no meaning. But they do. It's tempting, he writes, to see this decision as some big win. And it is a win to the extent that it's better that a rogue president be barred from illegal acts than permitted to continue them. But it's a mistake to imagine that the court is any less corrupt on the evidence of this decision. No, the court has not joined the No Kings movement.
People were so desperate for some sign of some tiny thing that they really blew that out of proportion.
They're pivoting. The Supreme Court is pivoting. This is the case, notes Josh, where the legal merits of the president's actions were just too transparently bogus, even for this court to manage. And critically, his actions and the theories undergirding his claims to the power were, for the corrupt majority, kind of inconvenient. And here is the key point that I want to make sure that folks understand, because I did not see this talked about much at all after the ruling came down. The architect of the current corrupted U.S. Supreme Court is the Federalist Society's Leonard Leo. He's the guy who has wined and dined these Supreme Court justices, and basically he's responsible for this 6-3 right-wing majority that we now have. Leonard Leo was behind the litigation that ended up undoing the tariffs. As Josh says, that should tell you all you need to know. In this case, Trump's claim to power was neither in the interests of the Republican Party, the court's chief jurisprudential interest, nor any of their anti-constitutional doctrines. So they tossed it out. This was right-wingers who essentially paid for, funded this case, this challenge to these tariffs. So don't be surprised that Supreme Court Justice John Roberts was happy to get behind that case and to toss out these tariffs. Indeed, writes Josh, the decision is actually an indictment of the court. These tariffs, he notes, have been in effect for almost a year. They have upended entire sectors of the U.S. and global economies. The fact that a president can illegally exercise such powers for so long and with such great consequences for almost a year means that we're not living in a functional constitutional system. If the Constitution allows untrammeled and dictatorial powers for almost 1 year, then there is no Constitution, he argues. The court also allowed these tariffs to remain in place while the government appealed the appellate decision striking down the tariffs back in August of last year, almost 6 months ago. The appellate court said, no, these are unlawful. There is nothing in that law that gives the president the right to do this. And yet the Supreme Court came in and said, wait a minute. Let's just hold it. Let's keep the status quo in place while we ponder this idea for the next 6 months. And while Americans pay billions of dollars in taxes that are eventually going to be found illegal, we're going to have to figure out how the hell, if it's even possible, to return that money to them. So they let this stay in place for 6 months when they didn't need to. In other words, most of the time in which these illegal tariffs were in effect was because of that needless stay, argues Josh. The logic of the stay was that deference to a president's claim of illegal powers was more important than the harm created by hundreds of billions of dollars in unconstitutional taxes being imposed on American citizens. It's a good example of what law professor Leah Littman called the court's corruption via passivity. Empowering anti-constitutional actions through deciding not to act at all or encouraging endless delays that it could easily put a stop to in the interests of the constitutional order. Of course, they pick and choose when they do this, don't they? Depending on who is in the White House. The court is corrupt, Josh Marshall concludes. There's no future for the American Republic without thoroughly reforming it of its current corruption. Last Friday's decision is simply one of those cases where the Constitution happens to coincide with the court's partial and illegitimate self-interest. And he's absolutely right, whether Stephanie Ruhle tells you that or not. Oh, and by the way, as you know, Trump has since vowed to double down now anyway and put still more tariffs in place under a different statutory authority, which he may or may not have. Because, frankly, he's too dumb to take the off-ramp that the Supreme Court handed to him. And as Republicans have been dying for him to take, as all of this is sending all of the Republicans over a cliff as we head into midterm election season. These tariffs are incredibly unpopular. The Republicans were delighted to see the Supreme Court strike them down, and they are agog that Donald Trump has turned around and said, well, in that case, I'm going to double them. I'll use a different authority in the somehow, which may or may not be lawful. And by the way, the reason that Trump claimed he must impose the tariffs on other countries, the emergency that he pretended existed, Well, that emergency, if you recall, I know we've been through a lot over the past year, but it was because of trade deficits that we have with many other countries, where we buy more from them than they buy from us. But of course, we're a bigger country and we consume more than, say, you know, England or Slovakia. So, of course, we buy more from them than they buy from us. But even by that standard, Trump's tariffs were and are a failure. As Bloomberg reported last week, the U.S. trade deficit widened in December, capping a turbulent year of erratic tariff policy. The goods and services trade gap expanded from the prior month to $70.3 billion, Commerce Department data showed on Thursday. So this is Donald Trump's own Commerce Department. The shortfall culminated in a full-year deficit of more than $900 billion, one of the largest in data going all the way back to 1960.
Oh, my God. So much winning.
The December deficit reflected a 3.6 increase in the value of imports. So imports were up more than 3.5%, and the exports of goods and services declined almost 2%. Yes, under Trump's wonderful tariffs, which did not even succeed on their own false terms. Those false terms, which have now been confirmed to be unlawful, but they didn't even work on that measure. Okay, but Trump told us, and his administration lackeys have been repeating, well, just wait, just you wait, just you wait until Americans see how much they're going to save on their taxes this year. And then they're going to be happy and they're going to elect us in November. Well, maybe. They've called it, quote, the largest tax refund season ever after the Republicans passed their so-called big, beautiful bill into law last year by only Republicans voting for it and signed by Donald Trump. You know, the one that cuts trillions from health care, blows up the deficit, and grants huge permanent tax cuts to corporations and wealthy people. Those taxes, he likes to say, no tax on tips, no tax on Social Security. Well,
those are all temporary.
There's a lot of, you know, read the fine print on those.
Oh,
not
yeah.
Everybody gets that. And yeah, those time out after 2028. But the huge cuts to the rich people, those are now permanent. All right. So how much are Americans going to save on their taxes this year? Well, the jury is still out on that because tax season is, you know, still underway right now. But so far, according to the IRS itself, for individual income tax returns filed to date so far, the average tax refund is 42% lower than what the Trump administration promised it would be. Are you shocked? According to the IRS's most recent tax return statistics, a little bit more than 22 million tax returns have now already been received, with about more than 20 million processed, 7.5 million refunds issued. The average refund amount is $2,290. That is an almost 11% increase from last year at the same time. 11% increase is about $250 more than last year. But that number, that's about 42% lower than what Trump had promised when he touted that the average American would see a $4,000 tax refund this year. And, well, why is that? Well, if you pool all of the returns and divide up the money in returns, the average may eventually turn out to be $4,000 once all the rich people put in their taxes. But if most Americans don't see that much, it means it's because most of the refunds are going to a handful of very wealthy people at the top.
Ah, so that's who Trump and they were talking about when they said the best tax refund season ever.
And then when they average it out, you're not going to get a huge refund increase, but the rich people will. So if you average their huge, you know, increase in refunds along with everybody else's, well, then it's a $4,000 average. Maybe. We'll see. But you are not going to get most of it. Donald Trump's friends, the ones that he says he loves, that he hopes that tariffs will, you know, replace income taxes altogether, they're the ones who are going to see that.
The Dow is over $50,000. Right. I don't know why you're laughing.
Okay.
That's what we should be talking about.
All right.
About.
Of course, we'll get to, let's get to that. Shall we? Just to shut her up, please. Of course, that was Attorney General Pam Bondi squawking against Democrats on the House Oversight Committee a few weeks ago during her testimony at an oversight hearing on the Jeffrey Epstein files. It was not in, let's say, the Finance Committee, where maybe they would talk about the Dow being over 50,000. 50,000 points, not $50,000. But anyway, so naturally, they were not talking about what the Dow was doing that day, as she was insisting that they would. Now, since her screeching about it, the Dow has since fallen back below 50,000. It fell by more than 1,000 points below it. It's now begun to rise again a little bit this week. But of course, most Americans, unlike Donald Trump, do not tie their own wealth and their own sense of well-being to the stock market. But nonetheless, for those who are foolish enough to take investment advice from this administration, there's one point that I've been watching now for several months, and I want to point out this one market data point of note, at least for some of those folks who do think Donald Trump is the great businessman. If you listen to this program, you have likely heard me mention more than once Donald Trump's failing social media site. It's called Truth Social. I don't call it Truth Social much. I usually call it his failing social media site, and I don't call it that just to be mean. I call it that because that is what it is doing. It is failing. It is, by and large, the only actual product in the company that is called the Trump Media and Technology Group. It uses the symbol DJT on the stock exchange because, of course, it does. We've talked about it. DJT, we talked about quite a bit over the years since they first went public back in, I think it was 2022. And at the time, MAGA folks were just spending tons of money buying up this DJT stock. They spent, billions investing in this company for at one point spending as much as $100 a share. And we reported on some of the stories at the time, as the stock was just slowly, slowly tumbling over time, about these Trump supporters who had put, in some cases, their life savings into this thing, into DJT, because they believed in Donald Trump, in support of him. Well, shares of DJT have been falling pretty much ever since then. And they closed this week for the first time in single digits.
I mean,
so that $100 you spent per share, that $60, that $50, that those life savings that you put into it, it closed in the single digits for the first time this week. Millions of Trump supporters have lost billions of dollars investing in this guy's failing company. Now, I will note it has clawed its way back into the double digits over the last day or two. It closed at $10.96 today. So, congratulations, I guess, to anybody who bought it at $10, at $9. Everybody else lost their shirts. So you can add that loss to the money that you lost paying Trump's tariff taxes, and don't hold your breath to get any of it back. Nor are you likely to get much back in your tax returns this year either. Even though the greatest businessman and the greatest deal maker that the world has ever known keeps telling you otherwise, and that you are all going to be rich. Oh, and as to the unlawful and unconstitutional tariffs, yeah, he's putting those back in place too. So get ready to still pay yet more there as well. Suckers. Tried to warn you. All right, let's take a quick break. And we are back with some election news. Some of it actually good. And Desi Doyen's Green News Report, pretty much none of it good, if I remember correctly. But we will see. It is all still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
You try and find a song that has something to do with gerrymandering in Utah. So the Osmonds' greatest hit there, their only one, reached the number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, by the way, from 1971. That will have to do. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All right, in 2018, the voters of the very Republican Osmond home state of Utah adopted Proposition 4, a ballot initiative that created an independent redistricting commission required to use established neutral criteria for setting political boundaries for U.S. House maps, as well, by the way, as state Senate and state House districts. It prohibited manipulating the districts in order to favor one party over the other. It was, you know, voted by, narrowly approved, but approved by voters in Utah back in 2018. And then the very Republican state legislature, according to a report today by the Salt Lake Tribune, largely gutted that initiative, and they ended up adopting a U.S. House district map in 2021 that created four very safe Republican seats. There's only four U.S. House seats in Utah, and they will all be Republican again under the map created by the Republicans in the state legislature back in 2021.
Now, in defiance of the voters.
Correct. And a group of voters, along with the League of Women Voters and the Mormon Women for Ethical Government, they sued after the 2021 maps were put in place, arguing that undoing Proposition 4 effectively strips voters of their constitutional right to the initiative process. The Utah Supreme Court unanimously agreed with them back in 2024, and they sent the case down the line to the Third District State Judge Diana Gibson in order to oversee the challenge to the state legislature's map that drew all four of Utah's U.S. House districts as safely Republican. And in a ruling last summer, which I believe we covered at the time, Judge Gibson found that Proposition 4 is now, in fact, the law in Utah, and because the legislature's congressional map did not comply with the law, the boundaries had to be redrawn. The legislature then took another stab at redrawing the map, and they failed to meet the law's guidelines, according to the judge, and so she ended up choosing a map that was submitted by the plaintiffs with a Salt Lake County-centered district that favors Democrats by as much as 17 percentage points, which, of course, is likely to result in a congressional delegation next year if it is used, with three Republicans and one Democrat. Nonetheless, Republican legislators, according to the Tribune, were furious about that. And last December, they passed a resolution condemning both the Utah State Supreme Court and Judge Gibson for judicial activism. They asked the state Supreme Court to set aside Judge Gibson's chosen map, but the Supreme Court unanimously rejected that appeal just last Friday. As the state judicial process was moving forward, Utah Republicans, you know, hoping for help in all of this. While that was moving forward, they also filed a parallel case in federal court challenging the maps. And this week, after the state Supreme Court unanimously rejected that appeal last Friday, this week, a panel of three federal judges also unanimously rejected the latest and potentially last, as the Salt Lake Tribune describes it, attempt by Republican officials to block the court-ordered congressional map from being used in this November's midterm elections. You know, the one where Donald Trump and Republicans had been hoping to gerrymander their way to holding on to their U.S. House majority. In mostly dark red Utah, at least, it looks like they will be losing a seat before voters even vote. That should come as good news to the tens of thousands of Utah Democrats who have not had representation in Congress for years because of the gerrymandering in the state. So in Utah, elections are not headed up by a Secretary of State. In Utah, it's actually the lieutenant governor that is the chief election official. And with Lieutenant Governor Deirdre Henderson saying on Monday that the deadline to have a map in place for this year's election was on Monday, it looks like Republican lawmakers have now run out of options to halt the use of the court-ordered congressional map that could cost them one GOP seat. Never say die, Republican State House Speaker Mike Schultz, however, said there are currently discussions about once again postponing the candidate filing deadline to buy more time for further appeals in the federal courts.
Wow.
Republican State Senate President Stuart Adams said he, quote, definitely would like to see such a challenge sent to the U.S. Supreme Court. Yes, that U.S. Supreme Court, where no, they have not joined the No Kings movement. GOP lawyers could, in fact, still petition the U.S. Supreme Court for an emergency injunction. That would be considered by Justice Neil Gorsuch. He presides over the 10th Circuit. Schultz, the House Speaker in the state, however, seems more resigned, according to the Tribune, that the court challenges may have reached the end for the 2026 cycle, with the Speaker saying, quote, ultimately, it's going to affect an election, and that's disappointing for the citizens of the state that one judge made that decision, he said. Well, actually, one judge plus the entire state Supreme Court plus an entire three-judge panel of federal judges. But sure, it's disappointing that the voters of Utah are having their way by allowing their ballot initiative to take effect to allow fairer districts where, God forbid, even Democrats might be able to have a voice in the state's congressional delegation. Very disappointing, don't you think?
Well, it does offer a good lesson that Republicans who are interested in gerrymandering their way into permanent minority power will not stop and will continue relentlessly on and on and on. Therefore, countering it must also continue relentlessly.
With just 3 weeks until the party caucuses, where delegates to the party nominating conventions are chosen, ditching the map imposed by the third district judge and returning somehow the map to what Republican lawmakers drew back in 2021, that would cause confusion and chaos for candidates and voters. According to the U.S. district judge who wrote the opinion for the three-judge panel this week, he said, quote, the right to vote is, quote, fundamental. This right is central to our representative democracy, and the ability to exercise this right is endangered if the administrative machinery that makes elections run is damaged by last-minute tinkering. With the court leaving Gibson's map in place, it appears to mark the end of 4 years of litigation stemming from the passage of Proposition 4. The Tribune posits proponents of Prop 4 celebrated the decisions this week, saying, quote, this federal lawsuit sought to undo a lawful court-ordered congressional map. This court decision to reject that effort is an important affirmation that the rule of law matters. That, according to the co-executive director of the Mormon Women for Ethical Government, she said, Utah voters deserve fair representation, and this victory is about protecting those voters, not politicians. So good news for the people, for all the people of Utah. Well, at least it's good news for some of them. Should be good news for all of them if they understand what our democracy is actually about. All right, and one more here before we get to Green News Report. As Donald Trump continues to pretend there was massive fraud, voter fraud in the 2020 election in Georgia. You remember that one, the one that he lost, as the FBI now has raided the state's largest county voting warehouse in Fulton County outside of Atlanta, snatching up the ballots there and trying and effectively destroying this secure chain of custody for them in the bargain on a highly questionable, and I'm putting it nicely, search warrant that was absurdly approved by a local federal magistrate who apparently had no idea how elections work. Well, it turns out that the far-right MAGA majority on the state's Board of Elections last week, the Georgia State Election Board, they determined that, yes, in fact, there was election fraud in Georgia, at least in the 2024 election, and that it was carried out by one of Donald Trump's biggest supporters, a guy you may have heard of by the name of Elon Musk, if I'm reading that correctly. I think that's how you pronounce it. Members of the Georgia State Elections Board voted last week to issue a formal letter of reprimand to Musk's America PAC over the billionaire technocrat's illegal scheme to get Trump elected. This, according to the New Republic. In October of 2024, the Georgia Secretary of State's office launched an investigation after receiving numerous reports from residents across several counties saying that they had received partially pre-filled absentee ballot applications from Musk's America PAC, according to the State Election Board's chair. There was evidence to suggest that America PAC had violated a state law which prohibits any person or entity other than an authorized relative to send an elector an absentee ballot application that has been pre-filled with the elector's required information. America PAC had also failed to display in a conspicuous location, according to the law, that this was not an official government publication, was not provided by the government, and was not a ballot, the State Election Board's vice chair added. The board swiftly voted to issue a letter of reprimand to America PAC for that violation of state law. It comes just weeks after Trump's own Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, was spotted lurking around the federal raid at the election offices in Fulton County outside of Atlanta because, as Trump suggested at the time, she was investigating foreign interference in our elections. Sure she was. It should come as no surprise that the only evidence of meddling with people's votes really came from Donald Trump's own camp. In this case, in 2024, the same thing that happened in the 2020 election, they also note. And frankly, while it's questionable at best whether helping people to fill out an absentee ballot application in Georgia by pre-filling some of that information, whether that should actually be unlawful, it is unlawful. And in fact, I will say that, you know, Georgia's absentee ballot applications are really, really complicated in truth. So helping people to fill them out like that really should not necessarily be against the law, but it is against the law. It is a violation of the law. And if Democrats had done it in Georgia in 2020, man, well, I suspect Donald Trump would be demanding they be imprisoned for it. I guess it depends on who is committing the fraud in this case. Anyway, in 2024, it was Donald Trump's biggest funder, Elon Musk. And he has a stern slap on the wrist to prove it now. Green News Report is next. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. Correction. Earlier I said, earlier in the show, I said there was no good news in your Green News Report.
Yes.
I remember now that there is. A little bit. At the end, as you'll find out in our latest Green News Report.
Nobody can believe when they see the kind of numbers, and especially energy, when they see energy going down to numbers like that, they cannot believe it.
Can't believe it because it's not true. Donald Trump lies his way through another State of the Union address. U.S. Supreme Court to hear Big Oil's bid to squash climate liability lawsuits. Plus, Trump Interior Department guts bedrock conservation law affecting public lands everywhere.
Very conservative of them. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Last night, I mentioned that Trump was honored with the Undisputed Champion of Coal Award. And today, he became the Greenhouse Gas Hole of the Year.
Well-deserved, Mr. President. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, while the fact checkers were working overtime following the State of the Union address, which ran overtime itself, what do you got for us today?
Well, yes, Donald Trump delivered yet another lie-filled State of the Union address on Tuesday, chock full of nutty claims and very little policy.
You don't say.
And lots of big whoppers regarding energy. Trump tried to gaslight Americans when he falsely claimed that energy prices are coming down. Electricity prices are actually rising faster than inflation in most of the country. Multiple independent analyses show that data centers are a primary driver. In areas dense with data centers, rates have spiked as much as 30%. Trump also said that tech companies can now build their own on-site power plants. But energy experts say his claim that on-site plants will lower electricity prices is not based in reality. There may be a small impact, they say, but all of the other necessities like grid upgrades, new transmission lines, and infrastructure, utilities will still pass those costs on to consumers. And remember, the Trump administration has canceled more than $35 billion in renewable energy projects over the last year alone. Reducing supply as demand spikes puts pressure on prices.
But if he lies about it in a State of the Union address, he can make it all go away.
Trump also shamelessly lied about gasoline prices. Long-suffering fact-checker Daniel Dale of CNN debunked that.
What I think is the most important price in American politics, gas prices. He said they're now below $2.30 a gallon in most states, and in some places, $1.99 a gallon. There is no state, not a single one, where the AAA state average today was below $2.37. That was Oklahoma. And as for that $1.99 claim, Gas Buddy told me that of the 150,000 gas stations the company tracks across the country, there were just four this evening, four out of 150,000 that was selling for $1.99 per gallon or less, aside from special discounts.
Well, so there's that. Four of them. You got to start somewhere.
In other news, the Trump Interior Department, which administers the nation's public lands and waters, has finalized a dramatic rollback of one of the nation's bedrock environmental environmental laws, the National Environmental Policy Act. The final rule guts more than 80% of the department's regulations under the law, radically scales back environmental reviews of proposed infrastructure projects, and limits public input. The administration says the rollbacks will speed up project approvals, but conservation and environmental groups argue the move will increase pollution and lead to more development of the public's lands with less scrutiny, allowing industries to exploit natural resources without adequate oversight.
Sounds great.
In the courts, this week, the U.S. Supreme Court said it will hear the fossil fuel industry's latest attempt to squash climate liability lawsuits that seek to hold oil companies accountable for costs and damages from man-made climate change, which is driven by burning fossil fuels. Several dozen cities have sued oil companies, accusing them of deceiving the public about the dangers of fossil fuel emissions and seeking compensation for billions of dollars in damages and economic losses caused by intensifying storms, wildfires, and heat waves. ExxonMobil and Suncor Energy argue that federal law bars local governments from suing them for damages in state courts. The high court's ruling could determine the future of climate liability lawsuits brought against the fossil fuel industry.
At least that's what the fossil fuel industry is hoping.
Yep. And finally, 18 young Americans from across the United States have filed a new lawsuit challenging the Trump administration's repeal of the landmark endangerment finding that had provided the legal underpinning for the EPA's authority to regulate climate-warming fossil fuel emissions. The children argue that EPA's repeal of the endangerment finding violates their First Amendment and Fifth Amendment rights to life and liberty.
The kids got it right again. For all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Well, good luck, young Americans.
Yes.
We're counting on you. No pressure, only the future of civilization itself. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other we've done since the beginning of time, download them anytime, all of them, for free at bradblog.com. They are free thanks to those few of you who hit a donate button when you stop by or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to make a one-time donation, or better still, a monthly automated donation of any amount you can afford to help us stay on your public airwaves. We really need you in this time of crisis for the world, for America, and yes, for independent media itself. So thanks in advance. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. You can find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, at the Brad Blog, and you can find Desi Doyen, who would really love to hear from you, especially at Blue Sky, at
Green News Report. Come by and say hi.
Go see her there. All right, that's it. We'll see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.